This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Excited to be here in studio, not just because we have a lot to talk about, from Ryan Garcia's second consecutive first-round knockout to the biggest heavyweight fight in a long time, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, a fight that'll take place Saturday in Las Vegas on pay-per-view. But I'm also happy to be joined by two of the best boxing writers out there, Mike Coppinger from The Athletic and Steve Kim from ESPN. Both these guys are also podcasters as well. So when you're done listening and subscribing and rating and reviewing and all that good stuff to this podcast, please do all those things, by the way. You have no idea how helpful it is for this show. Check them out on the Pug and Cop Boxing Show of The Athletic and the Three Knockdown Rule, which is available wherever you listen to podcasts. And is also streaming, right, Steve?
Special editions. The first one with me and Mario is on ESPN Plus right now. So there you have it. We're specifically previewing Wilder Fury.
When is The Athletic going to get into streaming, Mike? You know, they're all about, you know, just print. But now they're Armin Katayan video. Like, now they're
venturing. They had our boy Eddie Hearn do that big piece there. So maybe there's a space there for boxing. Who knows? I just want to say that I've been jealous of Steve for a long time. But to be with AC Slater, Mario Lopez, I mean, you can really use that for some points.
I mean, the guy doesn't age, man.
Well, for the record, I really wanted to do it with Dustin Diamond. But he's had some legal issues, so I settled for Lopez.
Oh, I bet that's not a very fun topic to discuss with Mario Lopez.
You know, he's the only guy on that cast that'll talk to Dustin.
Really?
Yeah. Dustin wrote a book, and I guess it was like Jim Boughton's Foul Balls about Saved by the Bell, and it was not flattering to anybody.
Cocaine and stuff like that.
Oh, I mean,
that.
He threw everyone under the bus. And Mario actually had him on his podcast or whatever show he was doing a couple of years ago. I think it's An Uneasy Truth. And my understanding is, like, for all the reunions they've done in the past, Dustin is basically, I'm not saying he's not invited, but he's persona non grata.
I mean, when you napalm relationships like that, it's funny. Like, when I was doing my daily show for NBC Radio, it was like Mark Paul Gosselaar for a long time was just like shuffling through shows left and right. Like, he would have like bang, bang, bang. Yeah. And every time he would have a new show on TNT, like, he would come on mine to promote it. And like, we wound up having the same conversation over and over again. Like, what the fuck is going on with Dustin Diamond out there? What is going on with Screech?
Well, the issue was, not to divulge too much into this rabbit hole, but back then, and we don't know this, and I rarely watch the show, but I guess Dustin was like 3 years younger than everybody.
Yeah.
So at that age, it's a lot different when you're everyone else is like 18 or 19 and one guy's like 15 or 16. That's a big difference, like high school seniors to freshmen.
Yeah.
And so he was always kind of a cast off even back then.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, there's your update on
Saved by the Bell. I'm doing a reboot, by the way, guys. So watch that.
I think I'm probably not be watching, but.
All right, so I want to get into Fury versus Wilder, the biggest heavyweight fight we've seen in a while. But I want to look back for a second here, too. On Saturday, we had Ryan Garcia, 21-year-old lightweight with the enormous social media following. He knocked out Francisco Fonseca at the Honda Center in Anaheim. You guys both were there ringside. This was the second consecutive first-round knockout for Garcia. Last November, he stopped Romero Duno spectacularly. Fonseca, that was even more impressive as Garcia continues to show incredible power with that left hook. Steve, all three of us, as we said, were ringside, but I'll start with you. What did you think of Garcia's performance? Was it a great performance or something he should do against limited opposition?
A little bit of both. I've said for a while, in boxing, especially at this level, when fights are being engineered for you to win, it's not if you win, it's how you win. And look, he's putting on performances where you remember. And it's an eye-opening thing. I thought it was like a Roy Jones left hook, how striking it was, using his guy's own movement to counterpunch. And if you have your head out in front of your front foot and you lose control of distance and spacing on Ryan Garcia, especially in the first three rounds, he will strike like a cobra. And he practices that. I remember asking him years ago during a Golden Boy promotion. I was working for Ring TV. I said, Ryan, I got to be honest. Did you watch a lot of Floyd Mayweather and Roy Jones? And he said, absolutely. See, everyone compares him to De La Hoya. He really grew up admiring those guys. And the other thing that was really impressive, and you talked about his social media following, Chris, is that on a Friday night, on a weekday, to go to Anaheim, and it's not L.A. because that's an all-day trip, and I know a lot of people that simply said, I can't take a day off from work, to actually draw over 10,000 on Valentine's Day, it goes to show you guys he's something now.
Yeah, they opened up a new section, I think, from what I heard, you know, hours before that event. I mean, Mike, what do you think? I mean, it was, look, I don't want to overrate Francisco Fonseca. He was kind of a blown-up 135 anyway. He fought Gervonta Davis, lost. He fought Tevin Farmer, lost. But, I mean, he hadn't lost like that, that's for sure.
What's so impressive is a little bit of what Steve said. Ryan Garcia's counterpunching ability. We know how great of a counterpuncher Canelo Alvarez is, who trains alongside Ryan Garcia in San Diego under Eddie Reynoso. I was so impressed by the way Ryan Garcia slipped that left hand under Fonseca's right hands. And it was like Steve said, it was like a coil. He just slingshotted it. It was so effortless. Yeah. And the trajectory, it was so compact. It was so sneaky. I think a lot of guys would get hit by that shot. And he's clearly developing. He's much better now than he was even a year ago. I think we just have to see him go some rounds now. I still have questions about his chin and his defense. And I think Jorge Linares can answer a lot of those questions, hopefully.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Two summers ago, I remember I was in Dallas for the Miami-LSU game. He fought on a Saturday night on a Ring TV stream. Fought Carlos Morales, who got blown out by Linares. I remember thinking 2 years ago, this is a five-year project. He was getting pushed around at the end. He got hit a lot. But as you noted, Mike, Eddie Reynoso has brought some real stability. I remember after that fight, the Golden Boy Brass said, look, nothing against the father. He can still be involved. We got to get some real training. And look, Eddie Reynoso will always be known for Canelo, like Thomas Hearns and Emmanuel Stewart. But if Eddie can really craft this young man into being a fighter, a real one, this guy's looking at a Hall of Fame trajectory as a trainer. Because if you just look at the physical strength, the development, the maturity, and the fact that when you talk to Ryan, and Mike, we were in his locker room afterwards. Look, I'm not saying he's cocky, but man, he really has a belief in himself that he's going places.
Yeah, and sometimes, Mike, and you talk to Reynosos a lot. I mean, sometimes I wonder about these trainers that for a long time are one-trick ponies, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, we've seen it kind of with Virgil Hunter somewhat. I mean, Virgil, outside of Andre Ward, has yet to, I think, really establish himself with somebody else. And that's just one example of it. But it's pretty clear from watching Ryan that there has been a tangible impact on his style, not just with the power, but, I mean, everything. His whole body of work seems to have improved under the Reynosos.
I was in San Diego in October to watch Canelo Alvarez train, and also Ryan was there the same day. And I think it's a lot of what Steve has seen up close in Big Bear. It's a camaraderie there. All the guys are training together. Canelo, of course, has a crazy work ethic, so that can only rub off on a guy who's younger. And we've seen Canelo tweet out, "I love you, Ryan." You know, he's really taking him under his wing. That's a huge help, especially in your belief system. But Eddie Reynoso, he just doesn't take any nonsense. He's always, you know, he's watching sparring. He's giving Canelo notes here and there, and he takes charge. We see so many trainers that let the fighters be the boss of their own camp. We've heard the stories about Sergey Kovalev will try to be like, "Oh, I'm not training today." And not just Kovalev, a million guys. But there's a real atmosphere at San Diego at Canelo Alvarez's gym, and it's really paying off. And like Steve said, Eddie Reynoso, I think, is the best trainer in boxing today.
So, Steve, Mike said he had questions about Garcia's chin, and that's fair because he hasn't been really tested like that. He will be tested if he goes up against Jorge Linares in his next fight. I mean, Linares is like the Lazarus of boxing, man. Like every time he gets smoked, you know, everybody thinks his career is over. He just comes back. And
he's like Zab Judah.
I mean, it's wild. Like, he just keeps coming back. But it's even worse almost because, like, he doesn't just lose. He gets, like, spectacularly knocked out every single time.
Five losses
all by knockout. It's wild. But, you know, and sometimes I don't know, like, if what guys say in interviews and fighter meetings is just lip service, but I really believe that Linares going back to Japan, you know, kind of going back to his roots, you know, getting his brother back involved with his team, changing his diet, going back to 135, I think that had a real impact on him. And look, Carlos Morales, again, more of a gatekeeper type, but man, he went out there and just flattened him inside a few rounds.
Chris, I remember being at the Pacquiao Broner fight on that Friday. The Zone had a card. I think you may have been calling that. And I was watching another ESPN show on the Plus, and I switch over to the Zone, and literally, as soon as I switch over, Pablo Cesar Canelo is just nailing the Linares to the canvas, I think three times, right?
Yeah, three times in the first round.
And I said, okay, for the eighth time, this career's over. Because I did that with Yayo Thompson. I remember when he got knocked. But the Lomachenko is the one loss I said, that's acceptable. Yeah. Every other loss, he was a favorite. Now, getting back down from 140 to 135 was absolutely key. He got overpowered that night. And I remember Linares came up about 11 years ago to L.A., came in with a guy by the name of Edwin Valero, and these two guys were absolute dynamos. And the first time I heard of Linares was in 2006. I walked into the wild card. I had just finished working out or was about to work out. And the late, great Maca Foley says to me, Steve, we got this kid sparring Pacquiao. He's from Venezuela. His name is Linares, I think. And he's like 18. So I said to Freddie, do you mind if I stick around to watch the sparring? Now, Rudy Hernandez brings him in. He works for Taken. At age 18 or 19, he had to be about 17 and 0. I can honestly tell you, out of the rounds that I saw with Manny Pacquiao, he probably won 3/4 of those rounds. He was that good. But it goes to show you, Chris and Mike, how hard it is to be an upper-level elite fighter because he has that one Achilles heel. He doesn't catch well. If he had like a Golovkin-like chin, I think we're talking about an all-time great. But like you said, he's like that chandelier. Bright, sparkly. Don't drop him.
Yeah, I mean, Mike,
was it just
Morales is not a great fighter? Or do you think this is another Linares comeback? Did he just make another spectacular comeback from the depths of boxing?
I sat with Jorge last Tuesday in Anaheim at the workouts, and I was struck by how confident he is. He seems to just shake off these losses and be like, I'll be back. Yeah. Like, you know, he has not a care in the world. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like Andy Ruiz, how he just walks around. And I mean, I was struck by how fast Linares still is. The speed is definitely still there. He's so athletic. The punches are so fluid. I'm going to favor Ryan Garcia, but you have to give Linares a shot. And it's a massive leap in competition for Ryan Garcia.
Yeah,
there's been fights in the past where Ryan Garcia has been punched, and it's reminded me of like a wrestling heel, like a Ric Flair, like, oh, not the face. Like, he's just
it's a beautiful face, though, Mike.
A beautiful face.
I'm jealous of it. I wouldn't want that hit either.
No, it's a moneymaker.
But like, this is the first like offensive oriented fighter that Ryan will go up against.
There's no doubt in the speed. But you know, I think for Linares, given his history, where he's not exactly George Chavallo, those first three rounds, I'd be very cautious. My goal, if I'm Linares, get to rounds 5, 6, and 7, and let's see if this kid could swim in a deep pool. But the amount of speed, and not only the aesthetic beauty of both men, is going to be something to watch, but it'll be interesting to see who leads, because both guys are master counterpunchers. Both guys really want to work against your own movement and make you initiate. So that's going to be the chess match. The first 3-4 rounds, who is going to actually take the risk of getting counterpunched? And then we're going to get into the fight.
And for people that don't know Steve's George Chavallo reference, look up some of George's fights where he took a beating back in
the
day.
Never was floored, by the way, with all those great heavyweights. Never hit the canvas.
He took some beatings against some of those fights, though, man. I remember watching YouTube clips of some of them. You know, I said this on the broadcast, like the happiest person there is Ryan Garcia. The second happiest is Jorge Linares. Third is Oscar De La Hoya. Because suddenly you have a tentpole fight in the summertime. And I'm a believer. You guys are two L.A. guys. But I think that sells out Staples Center. I think you have to probably figure out the undercard and get some local flavor there. I said that if Tevin Farmer and JoJo Diaz can fight at that point, that is a terrific co-main for an event like that. A true, I don't know if you want to call it a pay-per-view, but it has real depth on it for that type of card. If they can make that fight, you're selling out the Staples Center, Mike. Like, that is a major event, I think.
Ryan Garcia is a huge draw right now. I mean, over 10,000, like Steve said, on that Valentine's Day in Anaheim, where we know the traffic's horrible.
Yeah.
It could take you 2 hours in rush hour from L.A. Linares, at least boxing fans, he's a known quantity. He's been around forever. I remember watching him against Oscar Larios. I think it was on the Winky Wright Bernard Hopkins undercard.
2007.
I was going to say 8, but I guess it was 7, yeah. And I remember Linares is a great fighter. I mean, I don't know, he's a great talent. Mm. And he's a really good fighter. I do think that having the two good-looking guys, you really have a big draw here. Mm. They promoted right, and I loved seeing Oscar De La Hoya really out in full force last week.
Yeah, that was probably one of his better promotional weeks. I mean, there's been legitimate questions about how he's promoted some of his shows before, even showing up at some of them. But I thought he was strong with that, Steve.
Chris, you talked about his social media following Ryan Garcia. The question that I had was, look, we follow people on social media. People follow us back. That doesn't cost money. And you could like a post. You can retweet something. You're not actually giving your hard-earned dollars. I thought this past Friday was a test of, okay, Ryan, you are a social media maven. There's no doubt about it, but can you turn that into actual business value? And he did. Now you were working. You're on the broadcast. I was kind of finishing up my ringside story. I think Mike was too, but I peek over at Twitter. That knockout went viral. I mean, just look at the amount of likes, and then also
I would say this before you finish. Yeah. I would say it was the most for DAZN anyway. It was the most viral knockout since Ruiz Joshua.
Yeah,
like because SportsCenter picked it up. Everybody was tweeting about it. It was everywhere.
Even more than Canelo Kovalev, you think?
Yeah, because, yeah.
I think everyone was in bed by then.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. That happened.
1:30 in the morning.
That was some midnight madness.
And that Canelo Kovalev, as you know, went, 11 rounds. Yeah. And it was kind of like,
it was a long time.
It's over. But this one was like first round. Holy.
Maybe I just enjoyed that knockout more.
I wonder why. Yeah, but the funny thing about Ryan is, and even when I do a video of him, it'll be like a 45-second snippet of him saying anything. Now, most of my videos, they'll get anywhere between 1,000 and 2,000 views. With Ryan Garcia, it's about 20,000. I'm like, I need to film this guy full time. I mean, there is something about him. And I actually talked to some of the fans that came over to Press Row. A lot of females, a lot of wives, a lot of kids. It does remind me of De La Hoya in the 90s, where there's certainly a demographic that goes beyond Harry Hardcore.
Yeah. And Garcia is really just scratching the surface. This is a guy who's with Endeavor, one of the two biggest agencies, I think, in the world. He's signed to them for modeling and... he's done a little bit of that now. I think he went to Fashion Week in New York. I know he has interest in film, and they're representing him for that. So I think we could see Ryan Garcia be... there's no reason why he can't be the next Oscar De La Hoya, right?
Well, that's kind of my next question is, what is the ceiling for Garcia? I mean, I think ultimately you have to prove you can fight at a high level in the ring. And I think this year, if he follows the path he laid out himself in the ring, where he said, I want Linares next, and then I want Luke Campbell, obviously assuming Luke Campbell beats Fortuna, in the next fight, that's a pretty solid year for a 21-year-old. Those are two, former champions, level-ish type of guys, not A-level guys, but B-level guys. You can beat those guys. You go into 2021, you got some massive momentum there.
No, there's no doubt. And he's only 21. And to me, it's interesting. 2 years ago, when he started talking about Tank Davis, I dubbed that fight Tiananmen Square. I said he'd get run over. But I've changed my mind based on the fact I talked to a lot of trainers off the record. When guys are most honest, there's more than half the trainers that I speak to that say right now it is trending that if they fought in 6 to 8 months, they would actually pick Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, I think you still have to favor Tank Davis right now. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment and go too much off of Davis's lousy performance against Uriarkus Gamboa. But the problem with Davis is that he doesn't train. He doesn't take care of his body.
He's got some other issues too.
And also a lot of other issues with that. Another viral video of a bad kinds with where he was seen grabbing the mother of his child by, I guess, the shirt by the neck. Yeah. But then the police said that they saw a partial video and they're accusing him of punching her in the face. So we don't know what's going to happen with Davis now. But I do know that Garcia's side has talked to Heyman a little bit about doing that fight in December. And Heyman's interested. Garcia's side is very interested, but I don't know how it fits in with what you said, what you laid out for Luke Campbell.
No, but Luke Campbell's still a question. Luke Campbell could lose his next fight, and, who knows what happens there. And if I'm, and look at the way the WBC operates, maybe they make Luke Campbell fight Devin Haney. I don't know how it's all going to play out there. But even if there's no, I can see Tank Davis and Al Heyman being okay with that matchup because I think they believe they can win it and I think they see real value in it because of Ryan's star power. So you can do it in LA or wherever and sell out whatever venue you're going to be at.
Not only that, and I've seen this before, when Fernando Vargas fought Trinidad, what people do not talk about, one of the reasons why Shelley Finkel in main events pulled the trigger on that fight so quickly, Fernando Vargas had a burglary charge at that point. They thought this was going to be Tony Ayala all over again. And there became this thought like, oh, geez, if this kid goes to jail in 6 months, let's get some money out of this. Look, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what's going to happen to Tank Davis. But if you're the PBC and Al Heyman, you're thinking, boy, this kid every other week is on TMZ for all the wrong reasons. We got to start making some money.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they're going to actually do the Leo Santa Cruz fight in late May now. I know Leo's telling people he thinks he has that fight. I don't think that fight does that well. I think
not
Leo, there's such disinterest. I mean, we were all there when I dubbed him Leo Santa Snooze during the Ortiz Wilder rematch. I think even the Mexican-American fans out here on the West Coast is bored. But when it comes to Ryan, do I think it does $500,000 buys? No. But is it significant enough that everyone involved can make money, which is really the impetus to make these events? I actually think that fight can bring people to the dinner table.
Yeah, I know I'm in the minority here. I have not been a big fan of Leo Santa Cruz for a long time. He's a very nice guy. Doesn't really say much. And he throws a lot of punches, but the punches never have any steam on them. It's the same fight over and over.
Plus, he's always had a shelf life. Like, the way he fights, like, he was always going to look like one of those, like, 118-pounders when he hit his 30s. Now he's there, I think. I thought he looked kind of washed up in the last fight. That's why I do think, like, if they're going to do a Tank Davis fight, now is the time before somebody else gets to Leo.
Well, that, to me, would be a lesser version of Mikey Garcia moving up two weights to fight Errol Spence. When I saw Leo at 130 his last fight, you're right, Mike. His punches had no steam. It looked like marshmallows being thrown at a battleship. They're just bouncing off the guy. And I'm thinking, Tank is going to run through this guy. Mm-hmm. And I've been told if the Tank Davis fight does happen with Leo, that there's a possibility of that happening at 130. Now, that's a whole nother issue. I don't trust Tank to make 135 right now, to be honest with you. And one thing about the other thing that I'm really impressed with Ryan Garcia is the physical development. If you actually look at him in between fights, he is now filling out. And I think within 3-4 years, I don't think it's inconceivable that he'll be at 40 to 47.
Oh, I think 40 is in his, maybe not immediate future, but near even future, 2021, I can see 140 being there for him. Not to dwell too deep on this, but there was the obvious WWE element in the ring afterwards, Devin Haney rolling in there like, oh, look to my right, here's Devin Haney. What a surprise. Hi, Devin. What are you doing here? The point is, that fight needs time. Like, that's not something, like, I mean, Devin's coming back from an injury. He's still a bit of an unknown quantity given he's incredibly talented, but I hate to use the word marinate on this stuff because of the consequences of it, but that fight needs, to me, Mike, a little bit of time.
Yeah, I agree. Devin Haney, I think we all love him. He's a really great guy to be around, just like Ryan. That can be a true super fight. Give it a little bit of time. I mean, two good-looking guys with great personalities that both can fight. No reason to rush this. And just on the marinade point, I was talking to Bob Arum a few months ago for a story on Wilder Fury, and I said, hey, we've got some marinating and how, you know, Wilder Fury 2 didn't happen in May like it was supposed to before Fury signed with Top Rank. And then Bob goes, you know what? That whole marinating thing, that was bullshit. I made that up because I knew that Gamboa was going to kill Juan Mar Lopez.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get him
Don't
killed.
Don't bring it up, cop. Jeez.
Right.
Yeah. I'm getting sick and tired of hearing him.
That's pretty good.
I've been practicing.
I'm not sure
that
I buy that from Bob. Like,
I don't think
he'd sacrifice.
I enjoyed it,
those,
though.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Devin Haney bum rushing Bernard Hopkins? I'm sure you saw the clip. Yeah. I thought there was such irony because I remember Bernard Hopkins used to be that guy 20 years ago, mm-hmm. used to go to fights and used to get in people's faces. When he did the middleweight tournament in 2001, I went to every stage with Doug Fisher. He was that angry, young, precocious go-getter. Now, Haney's not really angry, but I think that there had to be a part of Hopkins saying, boy, this is Alanis Morissette. This is ironic. Now I'm the powers that be keeping a young Bernard Hopkins 2.0 away from my guy, who's Ryan Garcia. But I'm with you. If you make that fight right now, from a financial standpoint, I think you're actually shortchanging both men because I think it can be built into something much bigger. Now, I talked to Devin that afternoon at the restaurant. He's not coming back till June. So, you know, so Devin can say, I want Ryan Garcia. I'd be like, my next question is, when? You're not available. You're on the DL.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could go a year and a half. 140 even, that's sort of when that
2022, fight. I think, is.
Yeah, I mean, both in their early 20s. Like, it's fine. All right, I want to talk about Fury versus Wilder this weekend. The biggest heavyweight fight we've seen, at least in the last decade plus, probably going back to Tyson Lewis in 2003. Terrific fight the first time, expecting a very good fight the second time. Let me just ask you guys both this sort of generic question. Like, Michael, start with you. What about this fight do you find the most interesting? What's the biggest storyline for you going into this fight?
Deontay Wilder's power. No one seems to be able to withstand it. Bermain Stiverne, who was the only fighter to go the distance, got knocked out in the first round in the rematch. Fury's the other guy who's went the distance, and he barely made it to the finish line. He was dropped hard in round 9, even harder in round 12. And I just don't know if anybody can absorb that power, and I'm so intrigued to find out. Because if anyone can, it seems to be Fury with that resilience and that incredible self-belief.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, what do you think? What's the biggest storyline for you?
Going back to that first fight, I actually thought it was much more interesting than it was entertaining. There was a lot of dead spots, but I've said this about Deontay Wilder. He's so lethal and dangerous. He's the only fighter in the world that I could think of where nothing is happening and you're still on the edge of your seat. Because literally at any time, that right hand, I call him Detonate Wilder. It's absolutely an A-bomb. Mm. I was there when Ortiz was 2 seconds from being up 6-1.
Yeah.
And I literally blink, and next thing you know, the fight's over. It is a Tommy Hearns-esque right hand. I want to know who can be better in the second fight like everyone else, but I do question this, and I think Deontay Wilder said it best. When you face me, you got to be perfect for 36 minutes. I have to be perfect for 2 seconds. Mm. I'll take those odds. It's interesting that in rematches, Chris, you know this, most people always say favor the boxer over the puncher. Most of the people that I've canvassed, I did a story on the trainers. I'll be honest, most people are actually picking Wilder, as am I. I just get the sense that for all the good stretches that Tyson Fury will have, where he'll dominate and play ball control for days at a time, that one shot will come and it could flip the whole script.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm taking Wilder in this fight too, because for all the things you articulated there, like I think Fury, he could be up like 10-1 going into the 12th.
Right.
And I think he could still get caught with an A-bomb. And I was in Wilder's camp a couple of weeks ago, and I'm watching him work, and I'm kind of asking him, and I'm asking JD, it's like, do you guys even like train for decisions anymore? Like, it's just, or is everything sort of just trying to set up that big shot? Like, you know, position guys. That's what he said after the Luis Ortiz fight. You know, I'm just trying to move him around, get him in the right spot. And I think that's the right strategy. I think at, 34, 35 years old, Deontay's not going to become a good boxer.
The die is cast.
He is what he is. Like, he's a power puncher who has this devastating right hand. And if he just keeps moving, like, Fury's going to have to keep that head movement going and keep that mobility going for 36 consecutive minutes. And I think that's going to be hard for him to do.
I don't know. I disagree. I think if I was in Fury's corner and I would have him go after Wilder, you're going to be 270 pounds. Wilder's not going to weigh more than, at most, 228 or so. Fight him on the inside. Wilder, those wide looping shots. I think you're safe if you smother Wilder's shots. Of course, there's still immense danger closing the gap. But he's now with Sugar Hill, a crunk trainer. We know what Manuel Stewart likes best, right? Lean on the opponent. Sap him of his energy. Sap Wilder of that great power, if it's possible. And try to really push him back. I mean, we've seen it. We heard Wilder say that Fury has pills in his hands. We all know that Fury wobbles Wilder badly in that 12th round after the knockdown. And I was recently in Fury's camp. I watched him spar 8 rounds, and from what I saw, Fury was going after his opponent. I don't want to take too much from sparring.
I don't disagree with you, Mike, about the strategy of going after him. I think the worst thing you can do is to let Deontay Wilder kind of get set and get comfortable there, because then he just sets up that right hand. And that was a mistake Ortiz made. He was kind of backing up a little bit, and Wilder just laid him out. I just think, and I think Fury can do that for the vast majority of the fight, but I think if he takes, you know, 10 seconds off and like relaxes all of a sudden, and I hate to keep going back to it, but man, like I was ringside when he fought Steve Cunningham, and you know, watching Steve Cunningham floor him like that just
came
shows
down
you
in
that,
sections. I remember that. It was 2013, right?
Something like that at the Garden. Yeah,
that was the night first that Canelo fought Trout. I remember watching that in Texas. You know, Mike, about what you said, you know, agrees with you. Steven Breadman Edwards, one of the brightest young trainers.
So smart.
He said, Steven, this fight, I actually think Fury has a plan, and he goes, he may not be actually looking to stop him in two, but you do have to go towards him, because if one thing about Wilder, he has very skinny legs. Hmm. You could tell he's not hitting the squat rack, okay? But one thing he does—
tough. Like, I mean, as covering basketball, like, you can't grow legs. Like, you can't strengthen. Like,
absolutely.
It's just impossible.
But you've got to be able to put Wilder on his heels a little bit, because if he gets set and he gets on the balls of his feet and he starts to come downhill, he launches into that right hand. And so that may be Fury's way of saying, I'm going to be aggressive in spots, and I'm going to try to rough him up. And I was watching one of the shoulder programming, I think the Inside Wilder Fury. Everyone's talking about the 270. I didn't realize Fury was doing so much weight training. His body actually looks pretty good. I don't think it's an Andy Ruiz weight gain. I think there's actually a method to the madness. One thing I do notice about Wilder, when he puts his hands up above his face, he goes into the earmuff defense, that is a position where it's the one time he's not actually dangerous with the right hand. That's where Fury, if he sees that positioning of the hands, that's where he can march right in through the front door. I do expect Fury to be a little bit more aggressive offensively on his front foot.
Mike, you went and saw Fury, as you said. You know, one question I had about some of the comments he made about going after Wilder, second round knockout, all that stuff. Like, in the first fight, he was playing mind games with him. Like, he was trying to get inside his head, and I think he was successful at doing it and take Wilder out of his game. I wonder, when I heard the second round stuff and I'm going to go after him, I wonder if that was a mind game, too, to try to get Wilder thinking, all right, here he's going to come after me, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, he's fighting, you know, off his back foot and moving around too much. I mean, you never know with Tyson Fury what his actual strategy is and what he's just trying to make you think his strategy is.
Yeah, I believe it's probably bluster, and I don't really know what his strategy is. Because like I said, I don't want to take too much from sparring and just a day watching training. But I don't think you go with a Kronk trainer unless you want to try to improve some punching power and really sit on those shots. And I think it would be a great idea to go after Wilder's body. I mean, you're a puncher. Yep. Hit the body and try to sap him of his energy. Lean on him. Because for everyone who trash talks Wilder and says, oh, he's so crude. Yeah, he is crude in a lot of ways, but he's excellent at setting up that right hand. He's great at feinting, and his timing seems to be impeccable. I mean, Ortiz was standing right in the pocket, and I think he lost focus for maybe a second. Mm-hmm. And Wilder, he didn't throw the jab out entirely. He kind of like pushed out a little bit, and then Ortiz bit, and then the right hand came right behind it. He blinded him. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Steve, you talked about the trainers and writing about them, but like, what kind of impact can Sugar Hill have here? Like, I mean, he's taking over a finished product at this point. And, you know, I don't know, is he going to be... I mean, you mentioned Emmanuel Stewart. Emmanuel Stewart also failed with guys he took on. I mean, Miguel Cotto didn't work with Emmanuel Stewart.
Yeah.
So I wonder what that relationship
is. And I also wonder, Ben Davidson, look, he was there at the Wilder-Ortiz rematch scouting. I mean, if you would have told me 3 weeks later this guy's out of a job, I would have been stunned. And the sense that I get is that was an economic move, that Ben and the Fury camp could not come together on pay. It always comes down to money in boxing.
Always.
Yeah, and Ben Davidson is an extremely intelligent guy, and he's very gracious, saying a lot of nice things about Fury. Javon Hill is a young man that I've known for a very long time, certainly great bloodlines, but I don't ever remember Sugar Hill actually being in a fight this big. I really don't. But I will say this, you're right. Tyson Fury could probably have us three in the corner. I'm not so sure it would make a difference. He has an extremely high boxing IQ. He has rare athleticism for his size. And I remember Johnny Tapia, back a Hall of Famer, God rest his soul. I called him the George Steinbrenner of boxing because every fight he had a different corner man. And Jesse Reed was his Billy Martin because he was there like seven different times. Mm-hmm. Never made a difference.
Yeah.
It really is about, and trainers are honest. If you ever talk to Freddie Roach about this, he'll tell you that trainers can actually be very overrated. It is about the horse. It is not about the jockey. And it could come to a situation where if Tyson sees something intuitively in that first round, it may not matter what they've worked on the past 2-3 months.
I don't think it's necessarily what they worked on, but in-ring strategy I think is real. Like, and being unable, you know, you mentioned Freddie Roach, and Freddie famously, publicly, you know, criticized Ben Davidson for not having a more offensive-oriented strategy in that first fight. Freddie was convinced that Fury could have knocked Wilder out, and it's hard to disagree with them given some of the success that he had there. So that's my biggest question. Like, when you get in the trenches in a what is expected to be a close fight, a tough fight, what kind of advice does Sugar Hill offer up? And is it effective, or would a different trainer have offered, you know, better ideas?
You know, to Steve's point, what's the biggest fight Sugar Hill's been a part of? Is it Adonis Stevenson, Badu Jack? Adonis Stevenson in that tragic fight against Alexander Vozic? I'm not sure. I do agree that Fury's ring IQ is incredibly high. He seems to really pick up on things fast and adjust. I don't know what a trainer can really offer for Fury. But I do think, maybe it could have been economical, but there's always something to be said about the last performance. We know that fighters love to blame their trainers, and Fury did not look good at all against Adolf Wallin. He lost that 12th round and was hurt badly. He had the bad cut. I thought he lost maybe 5 rounds in that fight.
Yeah, I remember
his dad said fire Ben.
Yeah. That had a lot to do with it, too. But I remember when that cut broke out, and I think that was like mid-September. That was the typical Canelo date that went to Bolivian as he's battling Golden Boy. And as the cut is streaming, there was a palpable nervousness ringside from everyone involved thinking, oh, geez, not only did we over-marinate this, we burnt this Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, for 3 rounds, you're thinking to yourself, we're not getting this rematch.
And that fight was caused by a punch, so it would have been a knockout, right?
There was a business decision made by Las Vegas as to say, okay, we're going to let this thing go on.
His eyeball could have been hanging out like the Terminator.
Yeah. And they would have just gotten some duct tape, got some super glue in there. In dealing with both fighters, Mike, and I wonder, though, I think Deontay's much more relaxed this time around. I've been able to talk to both guys. I know that Tyson and I first had been up and down with the media. Deontay has been telling everybody, told me, I'm in the best place of my life. And also, he's much healthier this time around. I guess there was a hand injury going into that first fight.
I'll
go in a second, Mike. But being down in that camp, I mean, Jay Deese was telling me that, you know, he didn't use that right hand for like the entire camp. In sparring, it was just the jab. So that was, and again, we hear about injuries all the time, and guys are often hurt in sparring. But 100% healthy Deontay Wilder, I think, is a factor. That's a factor.
It's funny because for, I think the odds are about a coin flip right now in Vegas for this fight. It seems like everyone's picking Deontay Wilder. I haven't seen that many people picking Tyson Fury.
Mm-hmm. I'm
like you too. I'm picking Wilder, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. Before we move on from this topic, this is a PBC top rank type of fight. I mean, are we overly optimistic that this will open the doors, Mike, that we'll see PBC versus top rank fights, including Terrence Crawford versus somebody on that side of the street?
So much stems on the performance of the pay-per-view this Saturday. Look, people involved were saying, oh, maybe he does 750, maybe he does close to a million, but not just, I know myself and everyone else involved in the promotion feels really confident now that this is going to go over a million. I mean, the promotion's been great on Fox and ESPN. You had the Super Bowl. I think it was like 8 spots there. You have advertisement activation at ATMs at gas stations and billboards all over Vegas. I've been impressed. Anecdotally, so many people I know that don't even watch sports seem to be into this fight, say they're watching it somewhere. I don't think we've had a fight this big, certainly since Canelo Triple G 2. But to answer your question, yeah, if this fight does over a million, I think Fox and ESPN are going to say, all right, we have to do another one. There's a real synergy here. I know Fox and ESPN have been fighting behind the scenes over nonsense, the same way HBO and Showtime did.
I remember covering that. Like I would go running to someone at HBO and say, this is what a Showtime said. Then I go running to Showtime, this is what they said. And every time, every like 15 minutes or so, that's maybe a little bit of exaggeration, but every like 6 hours, it'd be like, Showtime will have their in-ring reporter doing this. Like, it's like, and HBO would call and be like, well, we had this. Yeah. Same type. I'm with you. I hear that stuff. Same type of
nonsense. And it's all that. But I do think if this fight could do over the million, maybe even more, they're going to be like, all right, let's see Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence Jr. now. I mean, that's a big fight.
Steve, is that the threshold? Like, I'm so fascinated by this pay-per-view because of, and I usually don't care because sometimes pay-per-view numbers, I'm like, what do I care? It's not my money. I don't give a damn. But this one, because of unprecedented promotion, Super Bowl promotion, NBA games promotion, like shoulder programming on network TV, press conferences on network TV, it's never been seen before. So what is a million a rousing success? I mean, I know what a failure is. Like 500,000 is probably a biblical failure to send, you know, Bob Arum, you know, to the weed pipe at some point.
It's all about the gummies for Bob now.
Nah, whatever. He'll do it anyway. But like, what's the threshold here?
Well, look, Bob said 2 million, which means he really thinks it could do 1.5. I think 1.5 would be a success. I think that would be considered a home run. To Mike's point, it feels big. It does. I remember the first day they really started promoting it is when Tyson Fury went down to one of the college football playoff games. Wilder was supposed to be in Atlanta for the other game. I think he got sick, so it was a little bit of a letdown. And now look, we're all on social media. For about the first month of this promotion, I got a lot of this type of tweet. Guys, are they promoting this? What's going on? I thought there was going to be a lot of energy between these two people. I'm not feeling it. Last 2 weeks, I felt it from the Super Bowl on, as you see shoulder programming on the various networks. You see a lot of the YouTube channels. You see the activations, as you say, the social media. It does feel big, and I this has to succeed in one sense, and I'm with you, and I've talked to Matt Kenny about this, who's on the ESPN side. I said, Matt, we're never going to get to a point where boxing, where you two guys are always going to work 7-8 times a year. But if you could do this 2 or 3 times a year, and Crawford, Spence, and fights of that nature continually happen every 4 to 6 months, just think about how much better the game would be. So, look, I'm hoping it does well. Not because I have any financial stake, because I don't. We need certain fights to happen. I was actually thinking about this last 15 years, going back to Abner Mars, Nonito Donaire. There's probably about 50 fights just like that, if not better, that simply did not happen with these Cold Wars.
Yeah, I'd rather not think about it. It's going to make me angry. But someone made a great point to me recently, because I was underwhelmed by the promotion at first. And they said, look, HBO and Showtime did this thing always where they promoted fights 60 days out. ESPN and Fox, with all the events they do year-round, they always do the 2-week-out push. And it's working right now.
And keep this in mind. Most pay-per-views are always bought the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
It's not
48
like
4 hours.
Hours.
I mean, I've never once bought a pay-per-view until the day of.
And some other evidence. Jim Boone, good friend of ours, a ticket broker, he called me yesterday, says, this thing has caught fire. And that's a guy that knows the market better than anybody because he has a stake. He will actually invest in events. He says, Steve, I'm going to sink or swim based on the market. And he's very honest. There's times he said, Steve, I'm bleeding here. I'm dying. He says this week, it's blown up.
Yeah, I think a million everybody's goes away happy-ish. 1.5, everybody's really happy. 2 million, everybody's fucking celebrating the streets of Vegas. Like, you know.
I mean, they're doing something where I think there's an NBA game on ABC that night. I think that started. They're actually, during that broadcast, from what I'm told, they're going to show both fighters coming into the arena.
That'll be huge. And especially because the NBA's got a younger demographic, too. That'll be...
And not just that. I mean, also, they're doing a pre-fight show on ABC. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1 p.m. Eastern, maybe. They're doing SportsCenter on the road, live from the Vegas. Speak for yourself. I mean, and all of us are going to be there. It just feels really big.
It does.
And like Chris said, this is unprecedented. So it would just be great for boxing if this fight can do that kind of those kind of numbers. Because look, NASCAR has a $2.8 billion deal with Fox. Are you telling me NASCAR is 2.8 billion times bigger than boxing?
No, interesting. And NASCAR has had its struggles on multiple networks in the past. No, I don't think that. I would say if it does underperform, I wouldn't even blame the promotion. What I would blame it on is the fact that these two guys have, besides fighting each other, don't have this depth of great fights, right? Like they don't have, you know, maybe Tyson didn't have it either, but most times, like Pacquiao became a star because he kept fighting great guys. Like he became a bigger and bigger star when he knocked out Hatton and Cotto and all up and down the list. These guys don't have that resume. Like, you can argue Deontay Wilder's the greatest puncher in boxing history, but the guys he's beating are sea level. Really.
Right, but there's also another factor, and it's the elephant in the room, streaming.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, and Chris, we're probably like the same age. Remember the way you got free pay-per-views was the black box? Those were like these magical things where you'd get these illegal cable boxes and you'd get the pay-per-views like, wow, you have a black box.
You could scramble those bad boys, too. Right. I did that all the time. You get some adult entertainment.
Right, yeah. So you'd have a good time. Then it became, at the turn of the century, Justin TV. And you could find illegal stream. Now,
Justin TV, I forgot about
it. Whatever. Right. I mean, you'd get a virus, but now literally anything could happen and you could find it, quote, unquote, for free. I talked to Eric Gomez about a week or two after the second Golovkin-Canelo fight, and he said, Steve, 7-8 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, before all this illegal streaming, we really think that pay-per-view could have done 2 million. So to me, it's like certain stats in certain sports are watered down because of the style of play. Well, I really believe a 1 million buy pay-per-view is probably equivalent to 1.5, let's say, 15 years ago.
You're right about the illegal stuff. I mean, it is apples and oranges in a way, but like the first YouTube fight with Logan Paul and KSI, they did everything they could at DAZN to crack down these illegal streams. They were everywhere. Like, you know, people were just trying to grab them.
It's like plugging a dike. You put your finger in one and there's another
leak. Whack-a-mole. It's whack-a-mole out there. It's crazy. So, yeah, that could be an issue there. But it's going to be a lot to look forward to. I hope that does do a big number for the reason we talked about. More fights featuring ESPN and Top Rank collaborating to get it together. A few other things I want to get to before we go. Last weekend, Caleb Plant defended his 168-pound title. Blew out his mandatory challenger in unsurprising fashion. This guy was more of a blown up middleweight than anything else. That's a second straight kind of, you know, D level opponent, we can say, that Caleb Plant has fought.
Mike Lee might be F level.
I mean, Mike Lee, not a contender either.
What'd you say, Mike? Mike? Well, don't get that started.
Yeah,
don't get that started, Mike.
We'll leave that one.
Inside joke.
Leave that one alone for now. What do we know at this point, Mike, about Caleb Plant? What are you comfortable saying about Caleb Plant as a legit champion / contender, whatever?
I'm very comfortable saying that Caleb Plant is an excellent fighter. His jab, I know he's fighting D-level guys, like you said. That jab is incredible. His footwork, he seems to have just great boxing instincts in there. The way he glides around the ring, he's a great ring general. I think it's a lot of the same questions that we might have about Ryan Garcia. Mm-hmm. How does he take a punch? How does he deal with adversity? But this guy has all the makings of someone who could be pretty big. And let's face it, he's the only white American champion. So that's going to be big as well for him. And PBC is clearly behind him. Fox is behind him. And I want to see him fight somebody who can really test him. And that's David Benavidez. And I know you tweeted about that on Saturday.
I mean,
Saturday.
And Steve did a decent number in terms of crowd in Nashville, which I think PBC should do much more of. I mean, I still can't believe I was in friggin' Ontario, California for Harrison versus Charlo. Like, that drives me crazy. But, like, I mean, that's a good sign for Plant's future. It's just I still don't know what I have in him. I agree with Mike. Like, the skills are all there. I mean, he's got the amateur background, too, to reinforce it. But I still don't know until he gets hit.
High boxing IQ, incredible confidence, passes the eye test. I actually think he has the toughest style at 68. As much as I like David Benavidez is what I call a snowball. It takes a little bit of time to get rolling downhill, as you saw in the Durrell fight, even against Ronnie Gavril that first fight. If you get behind on Caleb Plant early, let's say 5-1, look, that guy can play keep away. He can do some Dean Smith four corners and stink out a fight and win it.
Little Billy Joe Saunders to him.
Right, exactly. And Caleb Plant is a very skilled guy. And I did an interview with him, and it's interesting. You say he's the only white fighter. He listed all the fighters he grew up in that he was influenced by. Every one of them were like black guys. So he has
Eminem.
That style,
yeah.
Right. Roy Jones, James Toney, Pernell Whitaker, Floyd Mayweather, obviously. He, to me, has a chance to be another Terrence Crawford, Gervonta Davis type of guy that's a really good regional draw and can build off of it. I like his skills. Now, I don't know I heard something from Samson Lekowitz, a good friend of all of ours. He has David Benavidez, and they're saying, well, that fight's going to happen next year. And I'm thinking, and then they're actually saying, maybe it's pay-per-view. And I'm thinking, no, actually, it's not.
I heard Joe Goosen say that on the broadcast.
Yeah.
No, Joe.
We love
no.
the Denim Dynamo, but Joe, let's just announce the fight. So you don't have to do the business. One thing I didn't like, though, I actually think he has the style to really give a guy like Canelo fits. But look, and I know he's just answering a question, but when he says, well, I wouldn't take Canelo even if I could on May 2nd, I'm thinking, are you crazy? Look, you're coming off of a camp. You look sharp. You didn't exactly go through World War III. You could take 3 weeks off from the gym and still train 7 weeks. If you get that lottery ticket, you cash it.
You cash it, but I think Canelo just brutalizes him.
Interesting.
I think Canelo's speed is just too much. Like, I'm with you, like, if Canelo fell behind, but Canelo has become so good defensively that he swats away jabs pretty easily. And
you're not worried about the foot speed, though, because Canelo's still pretty stationary.
He's stationary, but, man, like, he starts landing body shots.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. Like, Canelo's the best fighter in the world in my eyes. As much as high as I am on Caleb Plant, I'm not picking anybody over Canelo.
Yeah, but look, Caleb Plant can where I agree with Caleb Plant, you know, maybe passing on Canelo, at least in terms of a long-term outlook, you beat Benavidez, you have two titles, all of a sudden—
Now you got value.
All of a sudden, you are the May 2021 opponent. Like, you are it at that point. And I don't think it happens in 2020. You know, I think they milked this thing a little bit longer with two fights with Benavidez, Mike, and then— I don't know who you bring Plant back against. The 168's not a very good division outside of the very top guys.
There's not a lot of real depth there. I am concerned. I do think they want to put that fight on pay-per-view. Ugh. Let's not forget that Al Haymon now has a deal with In Demands, and he has to put out 4 pay-per-views a year. So now they're now searching for pay-per-views, which I don't like. Pay-per-views should be budget relief for the very biggest events. Wilder Fury is a pay-per-view, no problem.
Now, Mike, you're saying he has 4 a year. I heard about this. So this week is a shared pay-per-view.
This counts as one.
So for the next 9 months, PBC has to come up with 4 pay-per-view events.
No, 3. They're counting
3,
this as
okay.
One.
Here's the issue. I remember TVKO in the early 90s. They tried the same concept that they're going to do like a monthly or semi-monthly pay-per-view. And they did some good fights like James Toney beating Michael Nunn. The problem was when you have pay-per-view dates without actual fights, then you try to shoehorn fights. Unless you had Holyfield against George Foreman, which did unbelievable numbers to kick off that series. Problem is, the rest of those numbers just didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. And also, if the PBC, which is their won't, is going to generally live within their own atmosphere or their own galaxy or universe, you run out of fights real quickly. You do. That's just the reality. Everyone does, whether it's Top Rank or The Zone. That's why this event is so important this upcoming week, because if you look at the best 20 fights you can make in boxing, and I've done these articles, they're always mixed and matched with other entities.
Mm.
You know?
The Benavidez versus Plant fight to me is the perfect fight to marshal Fox's resources and put all your muscle behind
it.
Put, you know, do it in the fall and put college football behind it, put WWE Friday Night SmackDown behind it. And see what you can do, because if you put it on pay-per-view, it's like 100,000 tops. Like, that's nobody else is buying that. But if you do it on Fox, maybe you can squeeze out 4 or 5 million viewers. And the winner of that fight, I think it's aesthetically a good fight because it's boxer versus puncher kind of thing. The winner of that fight, I think, is going to have a bigger profile and have some momentum going into a Canelo fight.
And this is exactly why NASCAR gets the $2.8 billion deal and boxing gets $100 million budget at most, because when we have a really good fight like a Plant Benavidez, the powers that be go, let's put it on pay-per-view, and we shrink the audience over and over, and then instead we're left with Caleb Plant, Vincent Feigenbust, and who knows what rating that's going to do, but it's not going to be that impressive, I'm sure. Whereas, like you said, I agree. Plant Benavidez. That can do 4 or 5 million, and then all of a sudden the antenna's up and Fox is like, oh wow, boxing can really move the needle here. But I know you did that interview with Billy Wenger, the infamous, on this podcast, and he's very bullish on pay-per-view. These guys really are trying to, like, look, Andy Ruiz is a guy they want to put on pay-per-view. I know there's talk right now of possibly a fight with Luis Ortiz. So
pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view with Luis Ortiz, which I'm fine with, but with Andy Ruiz, there is such a negative connotation.
Oh,
he's got
to come back and, like, first, I mean, and do something.
He needs to flatten somebody.
And you talk about the television aspect with Plant. When he won his title, I think, Mike, I think we were both there at the Nokia Theater at LA Live. That was on, I believe, a Fox platform, but it was after
FS1,
but it was after an NFL playoff game. The Saints played the Eagles that day. I remember watching it over at the eatery right next to the venue. It got a huge rating because they were playing ads during the game on the fight. So you're right. That's where the synergy works for a guy like Caleb Plant. But look, Golovkin was a classic case where he was the last really big HBO built-up guy. Golovkin did really good television numbers. He did good numbers at the gate. But when he had the headline, a pay-per-view show, you saw what happened. He was never really a strong A-side. It's hard making that transition to that next level.
Yeah, it's really hard to do. So hopefully we don't have to deal with too many pay-per-views this year, though it sounds like we will. All right, this is Mike's favorite topic, so I'm going to quasi-finish with this. Jermall Charlo, who is driving me crazy because he has no fight scheduled. He has got a belt that he really didn't earn, quite frankly. It's Canelo's belt at 160. He has been out there publicly bashing Eddie Hearn, Demetrius Andrade, anything to do with Eddie Hearn and Demetrius Andrade. He had this video that was out there where he, you know, made a homophobic slur towards Eddie Hearn, told anyone that wants to fight him to come to Fury Wilder, which is stupid. What are you going to do, get into a fight in the hallway?
That would improve the undercard, by the way.
Possibly.
Be honest.
That's true. But
is there a flagpole at the MGM Grand?
And he's on, like, he's on with Achen Barak, and he's calling Eddie Hearn an idiot. Okay. Demetrius Andrade needs an opponent. An opponent that's viable. Jermall Charlo needs an opponent that's viable. If in the next month, guys, there is an announcement for Jermall Charlo versus Chris Eubank and Demetrius Andrade versus Liam Williams, I am going to lose my fucking mind. I am going to be apoplectic out there because this is so stupid. This is like neither one of these guys. Like for Showtime, I don't know how much money they're putting into Charlo versus how much money Al is putting into Charlo, but whatever money they're putting into Charlo, it's not worth it. He is drawing the equivalent of the Friends and Family plan. Like, that is what his ratings look like on Showtime at this point. And I'll say the same thing about Andrade. I was in Miami. Most of the people in the stands left
that
after YouTube guys
bounced.
It was a walkout bout, which, you know, look, it's Andrade versus Luke Keeler, and I put plenty of blame on Andrade for not getting him out of there in the first round. Like, he knocked that guy down 20 seconds in. Finish it. Like,
Chris, you boxed Marquez. You could have boxed Luke Keeler.
I went 3 rounds with Marquez. That's good. He didn't knock me out. But could have. But these guys, like, what are we doing here? Like, Charlo's calling Eddie Hearn an idiot. Made him an offer of $7 million. Like, $7 million. I know Andrade did have an opportunity to go over to Showtime and sign a multi-fight deal there, and I had heard from Stephen Espinosa they'd be willing to do a one-fight deal with Andrade. Somebody do something. I don't care if this fight's on the Food Network. Somebody do something to get this fight to happen, because I can't handle any more of these bad fights these guys are in.
At the beginning of the year, the Zone held a press conference at an L.A. hotel where I was able to interview Eddie Hearn. He said, I have sent out the offer to Charlo, and I heard it was about $7 million. Here's the issue, and I like the Charlos. I actually am one of the bigger advocates of them. I think they're characters. I think they're the two-headed Clubber Lang. We need guys like this. Where they lose me, though, and a lot of other people, is you can't, and we see this a lot with certain PBC guys, you can't say that I'm Tony Danza. I'm the boss. I run my own show. I have my own promotional company. And then when it comes to offer... You say, Al. Wait a minute. Who's the boss? See, that's the disconnect there. Don't tell me that you call your own shots. Like, I was even told that when Canelo and Golden Boy...
You're banging my head on the desk, by the way.
Yeah, that was very, very good. But when Canelo and Golden Boy sent over an offer to Charlo during the fall, I heard it was around $7 or $8 million. My understanding is Charlo never got the offer. So these things kind of make you wonder just who is in charge. And in all fairness to these guys... Are they even allowed to take these assignments?
I have literally seen the email that was the offer to Charlo. So he got it. He got this offer. So maybe he's going to get, you know, two and a half.
He didn't push spam? He didn't go in the spam box?
Sure? maybe, you know, and Mike, not to bring up something we discussed on text, but like the, you know, like could Eddie do more like to make this fight happen? Like he was very personal with Mikey Garcia, and that's part of the reason it got done. Like he was sitting, he's invested in Mikey from day one of all this, courted Mikey like he was a girlfriend, like, you know, which maybe for his purposes he is.
Prom's next week, huh?
Like, but like he hasn't really done the same thing with Charlo, right? It's just been kind of emails and whatever.
Yeah, it's been emails and Instagram direct messages, and I think that it's hard because like we said, Eddie Hearn is spread very thin. He has a lot of fighters. He's traveling all over the globe every single week. I think anyone flies more than that guy. And he's incredibly charming in person. So yeah, when you put the personal touch with a guy like Mikey Garcia, that's what got it done. It never would have got done if he was just emailing and direct messaging Mikey Garcia.
Right.
He got it done with Jermall Charlo. He needs to probably visit these guys in Texas. But to your point, I mean, I don't know why Charlo's calling Eddie Hearn names. If someone offers me a lot of money, I thank them usually.
Yeah.
Even if you can't do it, thank you, but I appreciate the offer. You know?
But like, how dare you offer me an incredible amount of money to fight somebody? Yeah. I'd love to see the fight. And look, I love Jermall Charlo and Jermall Charlo. Like you said, Clubber Lang is, they're so surly. They're good looking guys. They dress well. They have a GQ spread. These guys could be stars, but they have this weird, almost deference with Al Haymon, as most Al Haymon fighters have. I had a story a couple months ago when I spoke to Jermall Charlo, and he said, Al Haymon is one of the best guys in the world. I'm pretty sure he would tell me about any offer. Maybe he would. I don't know. But I don't want to see him fight Chris Eubank. I don't want to see him fight anybody else. I want to see him fight the likes of a Canelo Alvarez, a Gennady Golovkin, a Demetrius Andrade. And to your point on Andrade, why does this guy come out of the gate and show his power and all his skills, and then lets the guys just hang around? I mean, Luke Hilger was falling over his own feet.
Yeah. Second time he's done that, too. Selecki looked like he was ready to go the first round.
Calton Dockery dropped four times.
Yeah. Calton Dockery kept getting up. That was weird. I was there for that. That was just like,
he sold his soul to the devil or something.
He just kept getting four times. Andre's now 0-2-1, climbing the ring ropes, thinking a fight is over when it actually isn't.
I go back to Andre in 2014. He had a deal to fight one of the Charlos on Showtime.
I think it was Jermell.
Banner Promotions had the deal.
Right.
And my understanding from Artie Palullo is that was going to lead to a much longer, more lucrative pact. And then he signs with Roc Nation, which I think anyone that signs with Roc Nation as a boxer has to be questioned. Guys, I don't think his career has ever really recovered from that decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, I think there are guys just brazenly ducking him, because it's one thing to avoid a tricky fighter when he brings nothing to the table, but Andrade's bringing $7 million in a belt.
Yeah.
Like, that's not nothing. And if you beat Demetrius Andrade, we talked about Caleb Plant being a front runner for Canelo. If Charlo beat Andrade at some point this year, he's the front runner for Canelo.
Yes.
Whether it's at 160 or 168, he's the guy in that pole position. So
I don't really think we see Canelo Alvarez at 160 again.
No, I agree with you. Now, let me just I want to get to that here.
Right.
This is what I kind of finish on. At the risk of being dated, because Mike, I think you and I can kind of agree that something's going to happen in the next couple of days with Canelo Alvarez. But I think his future is at 168 pounds full-time. Maybe for the right fight, he goes back to 175, but I don't think we see him at 160. Where do you think we are with Canelo?
Yeah, I agree. 68. He's gonna be campaigning there. And I know that he wants Billy Joe Saunders. The Zone wants Billy Joe Saunders. But they are a little apart on the money right now. And we'll see if they can get it done. We've seen these negotiations with Golden Boy dragging the past, famously last September, really further damaging that relationship with Canelo. And the money's really close, but it's just they're squabbling over not much. Like I reported, it's 95% done. Mm-hmm. And I know Callum Smith remains in the mix. Personally, I would rather see Billy Joe Saunders, if for no other reason that it's going to be a better promotion.
Yeah, look, Billy will talk, and that'll be interesting. And presuming they have the fight in Vegas, I think, you know, getting Canelo back.
Do the fans want that fight, though?
Here's the thing.
Saunders fans.
Probably not, but I don't think they want it any more or less than Callum Smith.
Yeah, who may have lost to John Ryder, to be honest.
Who needs kind of a bounce there as well. Here's the only thing, and I've said this and tweeted, I've expressed to people that I work with over at DAZN. Like, you have to have Canelo Alvarez's thumbprint and blood that he's going to fight Golovkin in September. Like, you have to have that. Now, Canelo has said, I saw a clip cut from him, that he wants to fight Murata, but he wants to do it at the end of the year. Like, and I think that's in play too, like fighting Murata in like December in a third fight. Like, he would fight like he fought Rocky Fielding at that point. But you have to have it signed in stone, like with like his passport taken, everything, to have Golovkin in September. Because if you don't do it in September, and I've said this on this podcast before, Steve, it's over. Like, Golovkin has officially become washed, and that's the way it goes,
Mike. Yeah, and to that, I heard over the weekend that Canelo Alvarez has told people around him that he wants Gennady Golovkin in September. He wants to do it now, but... Like we said, I think it's going to have to be a 168, and I'm sure this is not going to be easy. Gennady Golovkin
That's his way of telling Golovkin, I'm still the boss here.
Right.
You think that would be a problem for Golovkin, though?
I don't know. I just know Golovkin's fought it before, and these are two guys with big egos that are very prideful. Maybe Golovkin tries to fight it on principle alone, but... I do think if Gennady Golovkin will go to 68, I think this fight gets done for September.
Yeah. And I've heard similar whispers there about the... You know, about the thawness, I guess, in Canelo's camp and Reynoso and those guys about having that fight take place. I would say to Golovkin, I'm like, man, look, you've had like basically two gimmies and one tough fight in your six fight contract. You either fight Canelo for X money or you fight Demetrius Andrade for less money. Look, and I think he'll choose Canelo.
Or you fight your man Charlo.
Either way, you're not making as much money as you will for Canelo.
That fight at 68 in September is a reasonable compromise by both sides.
Yes.
The other thing about Canelo...
And don't you think, Steve, real quick, don't you think he's squeezed Golovkin enough? Like, he wanted to make Golovkin suffer a little bit for all the things he said about him after the drug test. Like, you've squeezed him enough.
Yeah.
He's older. You're making him fight your
point. You've proven your point. There's 30,000 more miles on the odometer. Now it looks like that car that Blues Brothers drove to Chicago.
Him go life and death with Sergey Derevyanchenko. Yeah. Like,
and that's the first fight when I said, man, he looks old. Got beat up. And I don't know where he is physically right now. Going back to the whole Canelo thing with all these guys thinking they're going to score, I am sick and tired. And I discussed this on the podcast this week. We need to let these fighters know, I don't care what Danny Jacobs got last year. He hit a score. It was a certain place in the market. He had a different deal. None of you are required to ask the Danny Jacobs money. And I think that was 12.5 to 14 million.
Part of a package, yeah.
Right. I don't want to hear any guy saying, well, they only offered me 8 to 9 million to fight Canelo. Nobody feels sorry for you. We're not going to throw you a benefit.
Go fight for 1 million, maybe just getting knocked out by somebody. That's not to punctuate with the Charlo stuff, but like Charlo, like his toughest fight might be Derevyanchenko on that side of the street.
I love that fight.
I love it too, but like if you're Charlo, are you going to make 7 million to fight Derevyanchenko?
Risk versus reward. From that perspective, that's the worst fight you could take if there's actually a chance of Golovkin or Canelo.
Dangerous fight.
And Derevyanchenko is a guy I think we haven't spoken about enough. Yeah. He's a guy who really deserves a shot. I thought he won edge the fight out. I mean, I had no problem with the decision going to Golovkin. But Derevyanchenko, if he's not going to get somebody, he has to get someone, right, this year.
I think one of the things that I've heard from Derevyanchenko's side, and maybe you've heard the same stuff, is that they'd be willing to fight Andrade if you gave him like a two-fight deal. Like you give him like a one kind of comeback fight, which as long as it's a reasonable financial number, I'm okay with after a tough fight like that. Golovkin's effectively getting a comeback fight now too, even though it's a mandatory title defense. Like if he's willing to fight Andrade later this year, I would give him that comeback fight and then set up a pretty big fight with Andrade, which I think stylistically is a good fight too because of the way Derevyanchenko comes forward.
Yeah, maybe Andrade's one of those guys that just fights down to the level of his opposition.
I think
maybe
against that too.
I think it's a lot of that. Maybe against Derevyanchenko, you know, we have a great fight.
Yeah, well, at least something for him. But meanwhile, just fight Charlo and Andrade. I'm going to have t-shirts. I'm really having t-shirts. I'm going to wear one. You're going to see me walking around Vegas with Charlo Andrade. I'll have Charlo sign it if I see him in the lobby out there.
Would you rather see Canelo Andrade over Canelo Triple G? Sorry. Would you rather see Andrade Charlo over Canelo Triple G3 at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're purists here, like as a boxing fan, I think Canelo is a big favorite over Golovkin in the third fight. I don't know what happens in Charlo versus Andrade.
I tend to agree with you on that. The trajectory of career, look, Golovkin is now 37, I believe, going on 38.
Yeah.
For the first time when I was there October 5th at the Garden, I said, it's turned. There's no going back for Golovkin. He's gone backwards.
But, I mean, look, Chris, you were on the Zone calls. How big would that be for Zone to finally deliver that fight? That would be their biggest fight yet.
They almost have to at this point. It is a requirement for keeping this thing going. You know, I mean, it's what they paid all that money for. It's still, as you guys know, it still has mainstream interest. The casual boxing fans are very invested in it. That's the money fight out there. Fellas, always appreciate it. You can check these guys out. Their podcast available right now. We'll see you guys in Vegas. Fury Wilder, ready to go. Should be a good one.